WV Uncommon Place. This podcast is a variety podcast that houses numerous series to cover mental health, empowerment, podcast framework, and various intimate theories to get to know the hosts. Along with occasional movies reviews and dives in pop culture with our event podcast episode. The Uncommon Place digs into bringing guests on that stories don't fit the mold and are very different. WV stands for the Great State of West Virginia, and every quarter we cover something in West Virginia. Stacey and myself, JR, are your hosts, so please come along for this venture to our Uncommon Place.
Hey dude, what are we going to do about increasing our audience for our films? TikTok and YouTube aren't doing too well for us.
Well, now that I think about it, my friend told me about the West Virginia Mountaineer Short Film Festival on April 19th through the 21st over at WVU in Morgantown. It's happening at the Kennedy Creative Arts Center on that Friday and Saturday, and at the WVU Mountain Lair on Sunday.
Dang, sounds pricey to be featured at such a large event.
No worries, bro. They accept all forms of films, and the submission fee is really reasonable. In fact, anyone listening to this podcast can get a 50% discount off the submission fee, which brings the entry fee down to just $5. Not only that, but with this waiver code, you all can submit up until Friday, March 22nd, 2 weeks past the regular entry deadline. Just go to their Film Freeway page and use the waiver code WVM24.
Yo, bro, I just searched up this fest and it's legit. They get anywhere from 250 to 300 submissions from over 25 countries. They'll be showing all kinds of films. Plus, they're gonna have a free filmmaking workshop on Friday and a bunch of live multimedia performances on Saturday. I also hear they're gonna be doing a live panel discussion with some video artists and animators about artificial intelligence, which, you know, pretty controversial, but also really important to learn on. So anyway, dude, should really go submit your film.
That's sick. What's the link? I want to learn more.
Dude, just go to www.wvmsff.com. There you can find more information about how to submit.
Well, bro, it says right here that we can win a prize for the best film, and even if we don't win, we'll still have a fun weekend watching films with free popcorn and milk duds.
No way! Free snacks! I also heard West Virginia has the best pepperoni rolls, so we gotta go!
Hold on. Howdy everybody, welcome to West Virginia Uncommon Place. Today I have with me Robert Simla Paglia. Did I pronounce it correct?
Simla Paglia.
Oh my gosh, close. Simla Paglia. Yes. Yeah, I got close, but I didn't chop it up. So the nostalgic question we ask on the show is, who are you? So we'll go ahead and get that out the way, and please tell us why you're here, and then we will jump into the Q&A.
Yes, so I'm a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats. I'm an attorney. I'm an actor, voiceover artist, author, and film producer, film and TV producer. Why am I here? I'm here to talk to you. I have a lot of knowledge to impart. You know, I want to be interviewed on podcasts, especially yours. So
okay,
that's why I'm here. And, you know, we'll talk about my book, talk about some film stuff, talk about attorney stuff, whatever.
All right. Let's jump into this big question. And I want to give a shout out to Stacey, my co-host, because she wrote the question. We both take turns going through the information of people, and one will dig here and one will dig for the next person. So her first question is about a 2012 Chevy Super Bowl commercial, Happy Grad.
Nice.
Can you share your experience with that, and what was it like being recognized for such a prominent role?
Yeah, definitely. That was a fun time. It kind of taught me how one thing leads to another, and you never know where you're going to go, where it's going to end up.
Okay.
So as you just said, the commercial aired on the Super Bowl in 2012 called Chevy Happy Grad. And I had gotten cast because I had worked with another actress in a off-Broadway play who asked me if I wanted to, she asked me if I wanted to be her husband. Like, that was what the text said. And I said, you know, I'm married, right? That was how I responded to her. And she's like, no, you dummy, in a commercial. So she told me, you know, explained it to me. I looked at the work of the writer, and I loved it. And when we had filmed the commercial, we thought it was going into a contest for Chevy to go to the London Film Festival.
Okay.
So the winner was going to go be premiered at the London Film Festival. So when Chevy saw our entry, they actually pulled it out of that contest and put it into the Super Bowl contest. And it ended up winning. We had a lot of people vote on it. You know, there was a pre-vote, and it ended up winning the contest. And, you know, it turned out it was, I played the dad in it. And I'm, the commercial is, you know, people want to check it out and people may have seen it. I'm giving our son a mini fridge, which I'm, you know, in the front yard, opening it up. It's got the big bow on it. And parked right behind me in the street is our neighbor's, cross street neighbor's yellow Camaro convertible. So he thinks he's getting that for his graduation present. So he comes running around screaming and yelling. And I'm like, you know, let's just let it lie. Let him burn out, you know. So that was the base of the commercial. And we got a lot of, I mean, it won the contest. So it got a lot of good feedback. And, you know, it still runs like every year on the CBS's greatest commercials. It was just on this year, a couple weeks ago before the Super Bowl. So it's got a lot of mileage, no pun intended.
Okay.
But, you know, it was great because it opened a lot of doors for me. And it just made me realize, you know, you never know, like when you're going in to do some work for this, you never know where it's going to end up. So you always got to do your best. Like that was, I already knew that lesson, but it reinforced that for me. So it was awesome to be part of that, that history.
Okay. And I'm glad for that. And that was her number one question. Cause, you know, the Super Bowl, the commercial, like that's the most prominent marketing and advertising arena you can be in. So that's amazing. There. Now your career spans television, film production, and law. How do you balance such diverse interests and roles?
So this is a question I get all the time. And actually those things intertwine. they all intersect because, you know, one of the things leads to another. That's how I got all those things under my belt, because I started out as a lawyer, started as an entertainment lawyer. I used to represent bands back in the 90s. So that's how I started finding out about the entertainment business. And then I decided, you know what, I was flipping through an adult education bulletin one day, and I saw a class on voiceover. And I said to myself, this looks fun. I didn't even know what that was. I thought it was, you know, cartoon voices. And I took the class and I loved it. And I said, you know, this is something that I think I could do. So I started pursuing the voiceover work. And I actually, my first job that I booked in voiceover was a PBS documentary. On the American Experience TV series. Yeah. So Campbell Scott narrated the episode, and I did a couple of the foreign overdub voices, you know, from foreign language to English.
Yeah.
So that was my first gig in voiceover. And what happened was people in the industry, my fellow voiceover artists, found out I was a lawyer. So they would ask me legal questions all the time, you know, like, should I set up an LLC for my business? You know, should I pay these taxes? What should I do? So what I did was I started writing all those questions down, and that led to the book.
Okay.
So each chapter of the book is an answer to those common questions that I get. And that book was a bestseller on Amazon in the entertainment law category. It's still in the top 10. It's, you know, after 10 years,
it's still up there.
So it's widely read in the industry. And then from there, people told me, hey, why don't you get a headshot done? Because you look like you'd be good in commercials and on camera stuff. So I got some headshots done. I got hired like right away, within a couple of weeks, I got hired for music lyrics with Hugh Grant, Drew Barrymore. That was my first acting gig.
Whoa. So
it just kept snowballing, you know? And so then after a while, filmmakers would come to me and ask me questions and ask me to represent them. And so I would do the business side and the legal side. And then they would be like, you know what? Why don't you be producer? Why don't you just hop on as producer? So that's how I learned the production side of things. And then I started my own company about 7 years ago, started my own production company. And now I do the whole thing. I could do from the business side and the creative side. So it like one thing leads to the other, and they're all really, you know, the law is kind of the thing that is the thread that runs through all of them.
Right.
So to me, it's all legal stuff. Like all of it. I'm using my lawyer hat with everything that I do. And even when I'm acting, when I go into court, I'm using those skills. So all those skills, they're interchangeable. You know, same thing when I'm doing a voiceover. I'm using the skills that I learn as a lawyer, public speaking, and going in front of a jury and making connections. I use those skills in voiceover and acting. So like everything, it really, all the skills kind of combine. And so that's how I manage things. I just prioritize on what is most important on the day in front of me. Right. And that's what I make my schedule based on priority. And of course it always gets messed up, but
that's how it flows from there. So. Okay. Now let's go to the attorney. Cause I got one thing for attorney. Now we know attorney client privileges. You can't say too much, but here's one question. What challenges have you faced in representing clients in the entertainment industry, particularly concerning artificial intelligence and voiceover work? And the reason I want to ask you this is because there's been a big deal about artificial intelligence, because it's not taking away from writers or taking away from actors in general, but it's spicing things up a little bit, made it a little harder.
It's starting to, actually. It is starting to eat into it a little bit. And I have represented, I can give you firsthand experience to answer this question. So I represented Beverly Standing, who was a voice actress. And I brought a federal case on her behalf against TikTok, because TikTok was using, she was the original text-to-speech voice on TikTok. And TikTok was using her, they used her voice without her permission. So, because she had done a job for another entity, and TikTok ended up with the files. And then that's how they made her the text-to-speech voice. So, we ended up suing them, and we settled out of court, and they took her off, and she was compensated for that. But that was kind of the first experience that many voice artists had with AI, that case, and it kind of woke people up. And so now AI's moved a lot further. That was a few years back. And, AI's moved a lot further, where now it's incorporated a lot into the entertainment field, and it's things that everyone's seen, like Star Wars, Darth Vader was AI. Val Kilmer was AI in the most recent Top Gun. Billy Joel.
Oh, wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, they used Val
Kilmer. Oh, yeah, because of his
voice. They constructed his voice, right. So that was all AI.
Whoa.
Billy Joel, in his most recent video, they made him look like he was young playing the piano. That was AI. So they used an actor and then they put Billy Joel's face over the actor. So AI it's incorporated more and more now into voiceovers and acting. So there is a lot, there's some fear out there. In fact, there's a lot of fear out there that AI can replace actors' voices, and it can. I mean, it really can. So we'll have to see where it balances out. I don't think that the human element's ever going to be completely replaced. And I equate it to the drum machine. Remember when the electronic drum machine came out? It was the big craze, 20 years ago. Well, they still have live drummers that play, they still have live drummers in the studio and on stage, because people want to see somebody drumming. They don't want to see a damn machine doing the drums. So I think it's going to be similar to that. People are going to still want to see human and not AI. And it really is going to just come down to how good the AI is. If you can't tell, then, we'll see what happens. If you can't, you're not able to tell the difference, then if you can fool people with AI, then it may become more of an issue. So we'll see where it ends up. I hope it doesn't get to that point. So
myself too, because I think that in the writing element, because I've noticed a lot of it, even in like the stuff that goes on with me behind the scenes, when someone sends me someone's information, like here's a crazy example. So you put a bio out, someone automatically takes your bio, puts it inside ChatGPT or something, and the next thing it spits out questions to ask, this and that, and everything.
Yep.
So it's like you can tell sometimes the difference in how organic when you know, how things are and how people ask questions. So I'm like, I tell people, I was like, you got to be leery. Like, it's a little good to have some, but don't let it be, you know, 100% of what you're doing.
Right.
Now we're going to get into the production side. Sweeney Todd on Broadway.
Yes.
Tell us about your involvement and what drew you to this project and what was your role behind the scenes on this?
Yeah. So on that, I'm on the investment side, the business side. So,
okay.
And what drew me to the project was Josh Groban. So when I found out Josh Groban signed a contract, then I said, I gotta be involved with this project because I'm a huge Josh Groban fan. I love Anna Lee too. Like Anna Lee. So she was a surprise, but you know, Josh was the one that drew me to it. But you know, Anna Lee, I went to see it. She was amazing in it. So, you know, basically I didn't really have too much of a role in the, I had zero actually role on the creative side of things. It was just, it was more on the business side.
Okay. Keeping it funded, keeping it going. Yes.
But it's, but I got to, you know, when you're involved with the production side, you get to go see the project and you get to go, you know, talk to the people involved and you'll find out things that are going on and you get to stay up to date with things. So, that's the advantage of being part of the production side. So
look real quick. Do me a favor. We have this little nostalgic thing called the shameless plug. Can you plug where people can meet and greet you across the internet?
Yeah. And
definitely tie them into your IDMB also for the simple IMDb. Fact. Yeah. Cause I do want to talk about you in just a minute about some projects you've been a part of.
Sure. Yeah. So, easiest way to get in touch with me is on my legal website, which is robsigesq.com, robsigesq.com. I'm on every platform there is. You can find me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on X. I'm on everyone. So I'm easy to find. On IMDb, it's imdb.me/Robert Paglia because that's my stage name, Paglia. So
wow, I see what you did there.
So you can find me just so it's /Robert Paglia, and then that's my IMDb profile.
Okay, so let's talk about Bathtub Chronicles and Within and Without.
Sure.
Tell us about some experiences you had with that and what you enjoyed about these.
So those were projects that were 100% me. Meaning that I produced them, where I was on both sides, business side. I mean, obviously there's no filming, just 100% one person, but
right.
those were my company. My company I was the main company involved. So I hired all the people, cast it, got the funding, did the shooting, everything. So Within and Without was the first one that I had done. It's a short. I played, and the other thing that I try to do when I'm doing things is the production company, not all the time, but sometimes I try to find scripts and I obtain the script. I try to find scripts that have a strong part that I can play. So Within and Without was one of those scripts I found where I played the father, and it was about my wife who had passed away, and it was our first, I had two daughters. It was our first holiday without Christmas, without her. So I played a character where I'm like a totally disconnected, clueless kind of dad that, you know, didn't really pay attention much to what was going on with my daughters. One daughter, the youngest, is like totally on my side defending me. The other daughter is rebelling. So that's the basis of the film. And it won a lot of awards. It went to the Shorts TV network, actually. It got picked up in USA. So
okay,
it was on Shorts TV. I think it's on the Shorts TV. You could probably find it on their website if people want to see it, because they're the ones that have the distribution on it. But, you know, we won a lot of awards, festival awards. You know, I think we won like 40 or 50 awards.
Oh, Lord.
For that one. We won best actors, best director, we won the whole gamut of awards.
So what is it like on the independent circuit like that? How does that feel to do that, to have those accomplishments?
It's amazing. So, you know, like when you're putting a project together, it's kind of a miracle that it actually gets finished, let alone when you go into the festivals and people, you see people crying in the audience, clapping, really appreciating the work, you know, that feels amazing. It really does. You know, I had people come up, and then you get to talk to the audience too, which I love. You know, you get to go up and take questions, and you know, the audience comes up and will ask you questions. So one of the questions that we got over and over was, "Hey, were those your real daughters?" You know, I'm like, "No, those are actors, both actors." So that's how I know that we did a good job of casting, because people actually really thought that we were a real family. You know, and that I was just filming it basically. So, so the feedback that you get, you know, and the awards aside, the awards are great to have, but it's not like it's not the be all end all. It's not why I do this stuff, you know, but see how it touches people. That's why I do it. So to see that the film actually does, you know, what we intended it to do, that's a huge thrill. It's a huge rush. So, and it, you know, it keeps you going. It keeps me going. It wants you, on and make the next film. So
now I pay a little homage on the show to a news magazine that we both grew up with, or we had challenges with. And that show is called 2020. You had John Stossel, comedic relief. Sometimes he talked about something serious, but in all honesty, I don't really remember John Stossel talking about anything serious. A lot of jokester. Then you had Diane Sawyer. And Diane Sawyer was probably the best person to be interviewed by. And then you had a lady that just passed away that was real regal, Barbara Walters. And Barbara Walters asked some questions that were personable, kind of would get you in this mood. If she did something at like 10:58, if it was really, really good, the news station would let her go on to 11:05. If it was a mid-grade show, they cut her off at 11 o'clock. So, Robert, right now, are you ready to take your 2020 questions? Are you ready to get in the hot seat?
I'm ready. Yeah, let's go.
All right. Now, we've covered a few aspects about you, but we didn't cover this one major, major area real heavy. You have a background in political science and law influence.
Yes.
Now, in law, and I don't mean influence, your career trajectory in the entertainment industry, you explained to us very well how all this tied in together. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this, and this is a hard question. What would life be without that law degree?
That's a very good question, because when I started to go to school, I wanted to be in computer science. So I started as a computer, I wanted to do programming and computer science. And then I just didn't like the math part of it. So I decided to take a constitutional law class in college. And when I took that class, and a business law. So I took two separate courses, constitutional law, business law. And I said, hey, you know what? I really like this. So that's why I switched over to political science. And I learned a lot about politics too. You know, a lot about how the Constitution and how political parties are set up, and our whole system, how it works, you know, the three branches of government. So I learned a lot. So if I didn't have my law degree, and if I was a computer science, I would be, this life would be completely different today. So the law degree, it was key. It was something that I have no regrets, put it that way. Like, I'm glad that I did what I did, because it led to all these other things. And I, you know, the one thing they tell you in law school is, if you're there to be rich, you're at the wrong place. Like, you may not be rich as a lawyer, but if you want to carry some power, like, then you want to become a lawyer. Like, lawyers are powerful, but they're not necessarily rich. So, you know, but law, it's part of our whole society.
Yes.
Anything that you like, especially entertainment. Like, entertainment is run by lawyers. If no one knew that, they're knowing that now. the second most amount of offices at Warner Brothers, behind the execs, the producers, are the lawyers. So, like, lawyers are, they're a part. There's different legal aspects of the entertainment world, where, you know, if you don't have lawyers, you don't have the entertainment world, basically. So, and that's a lot of parts of our society are the same way. So,
very important. Now, we got a hat that we didn't talk about at all. You were involved in radio.
I was.
Can you tell us a little bit about Radio? And the reason that I'm asking this is because it's going to lead up to that Barbara Walters question. We're doing the Diane Sawyer part right now. So tell us about the radio shows you were involved with and what topics you covered and what insight that you gained from that experience.
Yeah. So actually, that's another funny story, because before I went to college, when I was in college, I was a DJ. And when I was going to graduate, I was toying with the idea of being a DJ, you know, a radio DJ. So my family were friends, were with some DJs at their local radio station. So I went in and I did an internship for like a week to, you know, get my feet wet and learn things. And I asked the DJs on air, I'm like, you know, should I go to law school or should I become a DJ? And they were like, go to law school. What's the matter with you? Why do you want to be a DJ? DJs don't make any money. So that was one of the things I weighed on. That wasn't the be all and end all why I made the decision, but it was part of the process. It gave me something to think about. So I always had that radio in me. So what I did was, when I became a lawyer, I started my own radio show. I started a show called Ask the Lawyer. So it was a 1 hour, 1 week show where people would call in with questions and ask, you know, my dog bit somebody, you know, what should I do? You know, those guys, whatever questions they had. I got into a car accident. What should I do? My neighbor's trees are on my property. Can I cut them down? Like, that was a question I used to get a lot. So the show lasted a couple of years. It was pretty popular. And I did it after that. I had done a different Ask the Lawyer on a different station a couple of years later, which was just a 10 minute segment that they had that they ran regularly, and that went on for years too. So it was fun being part of a radio show. I was answering questions for people, so they were getting useful information. It got my name out there. So that was the advantage, and that was why I liked radio.
Okay. Now let me ask you this, Robert, and this is a final question inside this 2020 deal. Now, with so many hats, and I have quite a few myself too, what is the most prolific thing you've done thus far in your career?
That's a tough one. The Super Bowl commercial's up there. The Bev Standing versus TikTok case, another one that's up there. I'd say those are the two biggest so far.
Okay.
I've done other things that are pretty big too, but you know, okay, those are the ones that you use the word prolific. So those are the two that
are prolific. Okay.
That I'll use, because those are the ones that, you know, most people know.
All right. So Robert, real quick, let me give you a quick testimony. We met today in this call. We've talked a little bit about you coming on the show, and thank you for coming on. I want to tell you this, a lot of fortitude. I use it a lot in my shows, and I want to say that you've had to have it, because to do everything you've done, you've had to have this one major thing, this one quality that not a lot of people have: patience.
Yes.
Then the next thing, tolerance, because you have to tolerate a lot of things to get through all these facets of law and entertainment. Yep. You could have almost made a soap opera if you wanted to back in the early 90s called Law and Entertainment. It probably would have done good on CBS. Now, yeah. The thing that is great about you is you have a good atmosphere you can kind of tell around you. You seem like, you know, you take things in strides, and you seem like you move accordingly to how you see what's going on and how you translate things. And translating things, that's the hardest thing for a lot of people to do. So please pass that along to the audience. Pass that along to everybody that meets you. Now, the last thing I would like you to do is give a shout out to any and everyone that has helped you along the way, if you can, or just in a bubble. Because the one thing that we don't do in society with any type of content creation or entertainment, sometimes we forget to give flowers to that one person when we were down one day that just said the right thing to get you back in the mood.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that I could go on for hours and hours and hours with that one. So, but the one that I have to really talk about the most is my wife.
Okay.
My spouse. She's the one that I can tell you the story. One of the reasons why I started doing full-time acting and voiceovers was because of her. I was working full-time for a law firm, and I was, you know, I hated that. I hated that job when I was working for that firm. I was working for 50, 60 hours a week, and they would always give me grunt stuff to do. And, you know, they didn't treat me very well. So after I had done my voiceover training, I was going into the city doing auditions, because back in those days you still had to go in live. You can't do them all. You can't do it over Zoom like you can now.
Right.
So I had used up almost all my vacation time doing auditions and jobs. It was around March of that year. And then I got an offer to do a Disney film called Enchanted.
Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
13 days. I got a 13-day contract offer. So I told my wife, I'm like, hey, look, I got this offer to do this Disney film. And but I don't have that much time left from vacation. I'm not going to be able to do it. And she's like, are you crazy? Quit that job. Quit. She's like, you hate that job. This is a chance for you to do a Disney film. This is something that we could show our grandkids one day. So she's like, just go back. You know, she told me to go back on my own, which I had my own practice. So she told me to open my own practice again. And, she's like, we'll be fine. No problem. Just make sure you pay the mortgage. Like, that was her little caveat. No, but she was absolutely right. That was like the kick in the butt that I needed to go forward. And I ended up in the final cut of Enchanted. So my kids still watch it and still laugh at it when it comes on, probably smile. But now I got grandkids on the way. I've got two. So she's right. We'll be able to show this to our grandkids. And so I'm so glad I listened to her. And, she's like probably the number one catalyst that I could give the biggest shout out to. So,
right. And who can say that they've been in a Disney movie? That's like a.
Right.
You know, that's right there. So to wrap things up, for all the audience and everybody in the show notes, I will have all kinds of ways that you can meet Robert across the internet and catch up with him and check out his illustrious career, and his career still going. So I didn't want to put a period on the end of that. And Robert, I normally don't do this, but since you've got such a good attitude and you're just bright, go ahead and end the show for us. Give him an ending.
All right. Well, let's end it like this. Don't be afraid to follow your dreams, because the only thing that can happen is they'll come true.
And on that note, I'm JR, and this is Robert. We are signing off.
Please follow WV Uncommonplace on Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, TikTok, where we have some great content, Facebook, LinkedIn. Hit up the merch store at onecommonplace.square.site. Join the email list from the website and rate, subscribe, and give feedback from your favorite podcatcher. And lastly, thanks for listening and tune into the next episode.